We're just doing a series of jingles for bike culture here tonight.
Welcome to the June 2014 episode of the Bike Portland podcast about bikes and low-car life in PDX, taped here at Open Roads Broadcasting. I'm Lillian Kerr-Bake.
And I'm Jonathan Maas. Each month, we go in-depth on a subject that matters to Portlanders who get around without a car.
And we do it in the time it takes the average Portlander to get to work.
This month, we're talking about something dear to our hearts here at Bike Portland.
It's the thing that first got all of us interested in bicycling.
If we were in a comic book, this would be our origin story.
And it's something that Portland does really well, but not very many people take seriously.
Or even unseriously. We're talking about fun.
Bike fun.
Urban bike fun. Things like costume rides, history rides, pizza rides, theater rides, music rides, and yes, of course, naked rides.
And we'll talk about the amazing annual festival going on at this moment as we record this that combines all of those and more. It's called Pedalpalooza, and it's going strong after 11 awesome years.
But why is fun important? What are the secret structures that make it possible? What are the things it can't do? We're joined by an expert guest to tackle that, too.
Enjoy listening. So we're joined by our expert on bike fun, Carl Larson, whose day job is working at the Bicycle Transportation Alliance as an advocate, but he's actually here in a totally different capacity, his bike fun capacity, organizing rides through Shift and Pedalpalooza. So yeah, we're really excited to have you on, Carl.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I think Carl qualifies as such because he's been around so many of the rides, and he's sort of the Pedalpalooza is an all-volunteer, truly grassroots thing, but it does take, because it's gotten so large, it does take people to sort of corral everybody, keep everybody sort of on point to some degree, and send out those emails reminding folks what to do when and have deadlines. So let's back up really quick and just, Carl, for the uninitiated, can you sort of describe bike fun and maybe, you know, a little bit about how Pedalpalooza works, since in some ways Pedalpalooza is sort of the pinnacle of bike fun in this town.
Yeah, bike fun isn't a term that I was really familiar with until I moved to Portland in 2006. And I think my first exposure to it was going to breakfast on the bridges, where volunteers such as Lily serve breakfast, like coffee and donuts, to bike commuters on the last Friday of every month on the bridges. I learned that that's a tradition that started as part of what was called Bike Summer in 2002 and is now called Pedalpalooza, which is this all-volunteer festival of all kinds of bike events. I could go more into how it works if you like.
So how do the actual rides get created? I mean, there's basically the skeleton of the whole thing is this calendar that exists with all these rides. So where do those come from?
They're from the public. So we have this online calendar, and anyone who wants to lead a ride can put it up on the calendar, and hopefully it happens. Most of them seem to, but at this point we have 300 rides. Some are great. Lots of them are awesome. Some might not happen. It's just all volunteer, and some are led by individuals. Some are led anonymously. Others are led by companies and by organizations.
So who's sort of the what sort of slice of the community are showing up to these? Is it can you even take is there a typical Pedalpalooza attendee, or is it just a big slice of the city?
I think it's all over the place, because it really depends on the ride. One of the things I like to use for people to kind of picture what Pedalpalooza is it's, you know, the fortune cookie game where you add to the end of your fortune. Well, this is sort of the fortune cookie game of you just add on a bike to the end of anything you like to do. I like to make pancakes. I like to on a bike. I like to, you know, dress up like Bowie on
look
a bike.
Look
at trees on a bike. Look at architecture of Portland.
Sing along
on a bike.
To the sound of music.
Yes.
Eat sushi.
Yeah. Grill. I went on the emo ride.
Emo ride.
Where we just rode around with a blasting sound system, blasting emo, and dressed like we did when we were in high school.
So how many people showed up to that?
There was like 15 people on the emo ride. And I think what was particularly poetic about it was that we ended up back where we started.
Nice.
It's kind of rare for Battle Blues.
Yeah, no, but that was, I think, very intentional on the part of the organizers, is that we rode in a circle ended up back where we started.
That's funny. This may be a tangent for this radio program, but I think what's really interesting about Portland's bike culture is that I think Pedalpalooza and the way the rides are typically run has had influence on the way other non-Pedalpalooza rides end up being. There's sort of a protocol with Pedalpalooza rides. You know that you just follow the leader. There won't be a cue sheet. You're probably not going to end up where you started. And those are things that now when I go to other towns and I'll go on a ride or lead a ride elsewhere, people are demanding cue sheets. They're surprised if it doesn't end up in the same place. And I kind of realize that the culture that's grown out of leading rides in Portland is a little different.
It's shifted expectations, not just around route and cue sheets, but also group behavior and like what people expect to get if they show up to a bike ride. In Pedalpalooza, people are like, I showed up to a bike ride. That I expect to be led on a bike ride. And that's sort of like the bare minimum.
Expectations are the enemy of an enjoyable Pedalpalooza ride.
Right.
I mean, I think the best way to go to a Pedalpalooza ride is having no idea what you're getting into and a backpack full of weird stuff that you can turn into maybe a costume or something.
Maybe you can
prepare something. Definitely snacks, something to share. But if you show up to any ride dressed as a frog or with your grandmother on the back of a tandem, it's going to be awesome. But if you show up to a ride expecting it's going to be this far, you're going to burn this many calories or, you know,
you're going to get X, Y, or Z out of this
or
ride.
That you're going to pace line.
Or why didn't we go to this place?
Right,
The ride leader started late.
Something I've noticed is that we have such an expectation that rides don't start on time for Pedalpalooza that people now get upset when you do start on time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and I went to a ride 17 minutes after it said that it met the other day and it was gone and I was like, where?
Outrageous.
What? It's very unusual for like a large Pedalpalooza ride to leave within 17 minutes of when they said they were meeting.
Yeah, when I first started editing the calendar, and that's kind of my role with Pedalpalooza, is kind of wrangling these events and making sure that their written descriptions in our print calendar make sense. I used to really try to make sure I was careful in noting that someone said, oh, it meets at 7 and it leaves at 7:30. It just started taking up so much space and was so universal that now I just write it meets at 7.
Yeah. No, I did. One of the things that I like to do is I lead a very big ride, which I've mentioned on the podcast before, which is Bowie versus Prince. And Bowie versus Prince is at this point one of the largest rides at Pedalpalooza. Because of that, I've kind of learned that I can't follow my typical leading style because I tend to make announcements at each location and let people know what's up and set some parameters. And it's just impossible with a ride of 450 people that there's multiple loud sound systems run by people that you don't know. And you know, it's at 9:30 PM on a Friday night. Like there's no hope that I can have the same level of control over it.
Yeah.
But essentially what I do, because you get such a broad cross-section of people that show up to Bowie versus Prince, there's a lot of people that show up that don't go to any other Pedalpalooza ride. Mm-hmm. They're not bikey people. They're just really excited about the concept of Bowie versus Prince, and they read about it in the Mercury or something. I get up right at the time when we're supposed to, when it's like on the calendar for, and I go, hi, so just to let you know, we won't be leaving for probably another 45 minutes. This is a very like slow going. There is a convenience store located two blocks away. If you need to get a beverage or any supplies for the evening, there are no other, you know, stops for supplies. So if you need to do that, you can form a posse. My friend right here is going over there. You can follow her if you want. And like, that's what I've ended up deciding works as far as start time. So
you guys have mentioned rides in size from 15 to 450. And these are all rides that are happening just being led by people in the community. Unsanctioned, unpermitted stuff. I mean, tell me share something about the sort of street culture or the how the city deals with that, where you have hundreds of people showing up to these sort of semi-random, spontaneous rides going through the city. I mean, I think, you know, people's only real analog to that would be like a critical mass type of thing, but it's definitely not that.
Mm-hmm.
So how has that been playing out with these large groups?
Well, I have a friend who has never been on a Pedalpalooza ride, but one of her favorite experiences in her life is sitting on her front porch and hearing a Pedalpalooza ride approaching as she had a dinner party. And just these like few minutes as a whole bunch of riders in some type of costume rolled by and dinged their bells and they had a sound system and everything. And that exposure for her was a harbinger of spring that, you know, summer is coming and here the Pedalpalooza rides are. I can also see how for some people getting stuck in traffic light after light after light as tons of people, you know, dressed as Huey Lewis or whatever roll by, that could get old. It's like, oh, it's that time of year
the
again.
Worst but
it's
just when a you month. See someone that's held up by a big ride in a car to go. I want there to be a Pedalpalooza like release button that you get to press like
special code.
Yeah. For listeners that don't live here, that's because you pay by the minute in a car to go.
No, that's true, right?
Yeah, so growing up in Boston, I've always been impressed with how tolerant and patient other road users are towards bicyclists. And despite all the cool things that the city of Portland has done to make our road safer for riding a bike, I really think the street culture is more tolerant and understanding than other places where I've been. And it's never more clear than in a really big Pedalpalooza ride where people, by and large, seem to look around and seem like, yeah, there's a lot of them. Like, let's just get them through here.
Yeah.
People are pretty patient. We'll get out of their cars and wave.
With Bowie versus Prince, I actually find that the hardest part about the ride now for me is when we stop moving. Because suddenly I've got a mass of 450 people. There's really nowhere to put those people that isn't going to somehow negatively impact other people, and just finding landing spots for
you
for
have
a
to really
group
think
that
ahead
large
about where will we regroup,
especially a loud group, you know, because we have a lot of sound systems and I at this point have zero control over how much noise we make as a group. Like, there's just so many sound systems, I never have any idea how many sound systems are going to show up. So
one thing I've noticed is that it used to be like, oh, that corking was this practice, corking meaning stopping traffic that normally would have right of way at a green light in order to allow the entire group to continue moving through. So that used to help keep rides together. And some rides have gotten so big that there is another type of corking that occurs where I've found myself, and I've seen others, actually block the bike ride to allow traffic to cross because the majority on the road are people on bikes. You know, you have to kind of like cork the bike ride in order to get,
reverse
corking. Yeah, reverse corking.
Interesting.
Anyway, but I think this line of conversation is focused entirely too much on
logistics.
A few huge rides. I mean, there are some really huge rides, sure, but my favorite rides are some of the tiny ones.
Oh, my favorite ones definitely are the tiny ones.
And some of the quiet ones.
Yeah. Well, and I love the rides that you don't have to worry about your impact on things when you end. Instead, it's a celebration that it's like, oh, look, 12 people showed up at our bar.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not like, oh my God, you brought 200 people to my bar.
My favorite rides are the ones that have a theme that has nothing to do with bicycles, and they inspire someone who's into whatever that thing is to dust off their bike and come out on this ride. Like, I led a Jonathan Richman ride. Jonathan Richman is musician from Boston, and I'm a fan, and so I figured, man, I would like nothing more than to bike around Portland and listen to some apropos Jonathan Richman tunes in different spots around town. And it was not the biggest ride, which was great. It was just like a handful of people, some of whom didn't ride bikes much, and they had a really great time. And they actually ended up coming on other Pedalpalooza rides in the future. I've since seen them at other things. And so that's my favorite kind of situation, where you just get to meet some new people.
I love the history rides, and I find they're not my favorite to lead, but I love going on them because there's a lot that triggers your memory around going to a place and like physically being there when you learn about it that mm-hmm. I find that like things I learned on Paddlepalooza rides, I retain so much better. Mm-hmm. And later when I'm taking tourists around, I'm able to be like, oh, this building was the second building ever built in Portland that's still standing. And, you know, so-and-so lived here. And this was Mr. Benson's, like, first house. And
there
now
was
it's
a
part
Benson
of PSU.
Ride
yeah.
Didn't you lead yeah. a Benson bubbler ride?
I led a Benson really bubbler ride a couple years ago.
And that's one thing that, like, a lot of people don't appreciate because so much of the conversation around Paddlepalooza has to do with, you know, the wacky big rides, the costumes, the nakedness. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But one of the, and a growing aspect of Paddlepalooza that I agree is really interesting are these educational rides. You get to learn about Portland. You learn about your city, whether it's architecture or, history of the city and the urban issues and all that kind of stuff. I think that those are super interesting.
Mm-hmm. I still think that one of my favorite Paddlepalooza rides of all time was one that you led, Carl, which was with Darcelle, a.k.a. Walter Cole. Just a history of the person, Darcelle. Darcelle is an 82-year-old
female impersonator.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who runs...
Google it.
Yes.
Longest running drag club in the U.S.
Yeah.
And you let her ride where she showed up. And
oh, yeah. Darcelle informed me that she would not be on a bicycle because it was unladylike. So, and plus she's 82. So she got in a pedicab.
Nice.
And everyone else got in their craziest Darcelle drag.
It was amazing. And she... But what I loved about it is that she's 82 and has lived in Portland for so long mm-hmm. and has owned so many businesses in so many neighborhoods.
Right.
And
so like, we visited the different businesses that she ran.
She went to high school with NATO, mm-hmm. like who NATO Parkway is named for.
He was her first landlord.
Yeah. Like multiple of her businesses were bought, you know, by Portland Development Commission and
urban
torn
renewal,
down for urban
route,
renewal.
Right.
It was like it managed to be an urban renewal, queer history, black history, jazz history, like ride all in one. And it was
and
all
for that. Bicycles were just the tool. Like that was just the way they were so secondary yet so central. And that's what I really like, because it's just like, yeah, we happen to be on bikes, but that's the obvious way to just explore this
right
thing.
Yeah, it's just like they happen to be the best vehicle to connect people, mm-hmm. you know, to get them around. Because I've done a lot of like history bus tours, which are great, but the logistics of being able to, like, you have to load everybody on the bus and then you do so much driving and parking and circling and going to each spot. And kind of the organic experience of doing a history bike ride is that you get to have conversations between the places that you're going. And
Carl, you mentioned how so many times these rides inspire people to just get their bikes out because they see something in maybe the printed calendar or whatever that sort of sparks their interest. But there's so many inspiring aspects to Paddlepalooza and to these bike fun rides. I mean, we even see local businesses and organizations getting involved and wanting to put a ride and be a part of this whole thing.
Yeah.
But there's also, I mean, even a bigger impact is this sort of, it serves as this gateway drug for advocacy in general or mm-hmm. being a part of the city. It may be in a public service way, like working for the city or working for like a bike organization doing advocacy. So can you just talk about that and some people that you know that have sort of started brought into bicycling through doing some of these bike fun events and then just loved it so much and then saw.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, my day job, as Lily mentioned, is working as an advocate in a very, very conventional sense, you know, running these campaigns to get people excited about this or that, also teaching people about safety and encouraging them to commute by bike and answering their questions and stuff. And I think that happens all over the country, and that's a really important and cool task. I feel good about it. But I think what I feel most proud of and what I'm most impressed by is really how much Bike Fun manages to do some of the same things by getting people on bikes and teaching them things without having them even realize that they're learning. You know, to get in a big group and ride, you get exposed to all different people. You see all different situations. You realize that you should probably bring a light along wherever you're going because it might get dark. You know, you carry a lock. You know, all these things that I teach in a workshop in many cases are really effectively taught over the course of Paddlepalooza for folks who just jump on board.
I think that the thing about bike fun as advocacy is that it's such a good gateway drug into understanding biking without the guilt that sort of, I feel like commonly people that don't bike that'll find out I like bikes will be like, oh, I should bike, or I am gonna start bike commuting one of these days,
right.
And I think guilt is one, a terrible way to motivate anyone to do anything, and is a, once you really start biking you realize that guilt is not, like, you know, not the best motivator.
Yeah, fun's the best incentive.
Fun is always the best incentive.
We don't usually have the, like, save the earth ride.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No one wants to go on that.
No, and we're incentive-based creatures. We like to go for things that feel good to us. And if you're using a bike to do something because it's fun, you know, it makes biking easier.
Yeah.
Was very significant to me. We always say that Breakfast on the Bridges is sort of preaching to the choir, because Breakfast on the Bridges happens on the bike parts of the bridge for people that are already bike commuting to work. It's a great community building apparatus, but it's not necessarily reaching people who aren't already riding bikes. But the World Naked Bike Ride, whatever you want to say about it, there's a ton of people who go on that who never ride bikes otherwise, but there's people who start riding their bikes for the World Naked Bike Ride that then become bike commuters.
Oh, yeah. Right. People have, so I help with some of the organization of that, and some people will complain about folks who drive to the start point, and I just so don't care. I helped a couple load their tandem into their van after the ride a few years ago, and they were so psyched. They had come in from Camas, Washington, to go on the ride, and they said, you know, next year I think we're going to actually ride to Delta Park, to this MAX stop, light rail stop, and take the train in to get here. I mean, that's a lot more effort than what I did to get to the start.
Yeah.
And so I would never bash someone.
Camas is not super close to Portland.
Yeah. So. I mean, yeah, people definitely come out for this stuff, and it's a huge gateway. It's wonderful.
Well, I think we've both organized the World Naked Bike Ride in the same year before, and we had just one particular year that was just really hard on everyone. There was just a lot of logistics. It was back when we were still running a very large dance party on top of running a ride.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah. Looking back. we all the organizers were really worn out by the end of that, but we got this email, this beautifully written email from a man who was overweight. I say that because it was very important to his email. It was about how he'd been interested in this for a long time, and he'd really wanted to do it, but he didn't know if he was strong enough to be able to ride his bike. And the subject line of the email was, Dionysus is alive in the streets of Portland.
Yeah.
And it was
gets sent out around. And
it's one of the most elegant emails I've ever read in my life.
He was worried he wouldn't make the whole ride.
And he ended up having to stop halfway up the Broadway, mm-hmm. or the Burnside Bridge, because the hill on the Burnside, which is not a huge hill, but it's a hill. If you're not used to riding bikes.
And we just don't realize.
Yeah, we just don't realize it because you get used to it, even if you just ride casually, regularly. He had to stop halfway up because he just couldn't do it. But he vowed that he was going to, you know, ride his bike enough to be able to make it the whole way the next year. And I was like, those are the people we're reaching when we're reaching out with something that's interesting to them. That's then on a bike. You get to feel free while you're also doing something that you're really excited about, which might be getting naked for some people. But it also might be, you know, learning about the history of the Portland Development Commission.
I gotta say, as a gateway, though, the Breakfast on the Bridge serves a different purpose, which is this jealousy, which I think happens for other pedalpalooza. Where, you know, if you're driving, and I've been driving during pedalpalooza events, and I've looked longingly out the window, and I've just been like, oh, man. That's what I should be doing right now. I wish I was on a bike right now. And that's got to be good for biking, right? If somebody takes that.
If you're sitting there going, oh, but look, they're having so much fun.
I wish someone was serving me breakfast right now.
Yeah. No, so we try to do that.
So all these rides are so powerful. They're, you know, open to everyone, free, all sorts of different. There's such a diversity in the rides and types of rides that are offered. They have this huge, powerful impact on the community. But when you, in a lot of circles, when you talk about bike-friendly cities, most people want to talk about infrastructure, bike lanes, miles of protected bike lanes,
and all this stuff. How wide are your cycle tracks?
Yes, access issues and all these things. And what's interesting in Portland is that bike fun is such a big part of what's made us a bike-friendly city. And if you look at the start of Portland's bike fun movement, let's say 2002, Bike Summer started, and, you know, it's been going strong ever since then. that's a pretty, you know, there's been a significant increase in bike ridership in those years. Probably, I mean, the most significant, you know, of ever, you know, in that decade, so many more people riding. Talk a little bit about that combination or the differences between having a mature network in terms of infrastructure and bike lanes versus this really mature, in a way, bike fun social network that happens.
Well, I don't think they're independent. I mean, I'll note that the City of Portland Bureau of Transportation has sponsored generously Pedalpalooza for years. So the city, the same city that you know, has been working hard to make our streets safer, also recognizes that this bike fun has some value. And so I think that's a really cool thing that those things have developed and progressed in tandem.
But you don't, I also would say that it's, what's so nice about Bike Fun is that it's kind of, you can pop up, it's sort of insta infrastructure. You know, if we make all the argument that safety in numbers is what's most important and, you know, that's the way that we see safety for bicyclists go the most up is more people riding. Well, what if you've got 50 people riding around you at once? Like, this is kind of the basis of critical mass in a lot of cities, is that you can suddenly, when you've got enough people on board, you can tackle the kind of roadways that you might not feel comfortable on as a solo cyclist. And, you know, I don't think that bike fun is a substitute for great infrastructure, nor do I think it's a substitute for advocating for infrastructure. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I don't think that, you can't just do build it and they will come, because encouragement is an absolutely essential part. Like I mentioned, I don't think guilt is the best encouragement device. I think fun is the best encouragement device. So whether or not the bike fun is coming from above, it's from the city being like, we're going to organize a series of rides to celebrate our new infrastructure. Or if it's from below, it's from people saying, we want to get out and ride our bikes. We don't, you know, we want to support building a community, so we're going to do this.
Or another way they tie in is, we're going to ride on a really dangerous road. There is a ride coming up on Barber Boulevard, which is the third year that's happened. Yeah. Barber is a problem.
It's and literally so it's called saying, the Barber High Crash Corridor.
Yeah. Right. So that's advocacy right there that will hopefully eventually be tied to actual physical change on the roadway.
So how come things have been so rosy for so long with Bike Fun? There's really doesn't seem to be any real problems in terms of people getting upset or problems with the city, where critical mass attracted so much, so many problems, so much so that it's pretty much dissolved and went away.
You know, that's something that baffles me. I mean, we just had 9,000 naked people ride through the streets of Portland. If we had called that critical mass and there were a tenth as many people, it would be a problem. So those two words together somehow.
It's really the power of framing and narrative and how you position something.
Well, and that's actually, in a large part, I think what's great about the term bike fun. It's like the kitten brigade. Exactly. It's really, it's
you
really,
can't be against.
Yeah,
that.
Like, are you against fun? Yeah. Do you think fun is a bad thing to have? Right. No, there's certainly people out there that I don't ever meet in person that I just see online that seem to think that fun is a bad thing if it happens on a bike. But I've not ever actually met a person that is profoundly upset at the idea of me getting out and riding bikes with other people, or the idea of a bunch of kids and their parents getting out and riding bikes. Like, I haven't talked face to face with those people. When I talk to people that are ever upset about a ride, it's usually because they had to wait extra long in their car, or people were leaving trash in the park and not cleaning up after themselves. It's very like a micro level. It's not the macro level of bike fun is evil, because it's, but critical mass had gained a reputation as very confrontational, earned or not, and critical mass was seen as angry, and people don't like angry things.
Well, Pedalpalooza never saw the police crackdown that
exactly.
Critical Mass did, and wasn't left with antagonists. And
yeah,
that's a difference.
So none of this is possible unless people show up.
Right.
And
right.
I think, you know, for folks who might be listening to this outside of Portland, or just anybody that's interested in bringing some bike fun to their town or just doing it in general, what are some tips, Carl, that you could share? Our tip of the month for this episode would be, how do you get people to show up to one of these?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think there's some patience involved, because these things haven't always been huge. I mean, our biggest event has just grown and grown and grown in leaps and bounds over the past few years. So I just continue, for the few people who do show up, continuing to show up, I think that's really key, that persistence. And like being willing to reach out to different communities and encourage them to get involved. I think that's really key.
I think one of the key things that makes Bike Fun both be an act of advocacy but also helps with the showing up is really targeting groups that you like that aren't necessarily bike groups,
right,
and asking them, hey, can I work with you on leading a ride? I really love what you do. Are you willing to work with me on doing it on bikes? This still happens in Portland. This is not, it's not a foregone conclusion that things will happen on bikes. Like, still reach out to organizations and say, hey, we really like soccer. Are you willing to have a Timbers ride on bikes?
Yeah.
Equity tour that Know Your City and Opal leads is going to be on bike for the first time because someone reached out to them and said, hey, you do this bus tour, can we do it on a bike?
Yeah, attacking and crushing the identity politics of bicycling is probably the best thing you can do. Because if people feel as though these events are owned by the people who have the nice bikes and wear the bike clothes and, you know how to bike in the proper way and party on a bike in the proper way, like, nobody wants to go to that.
Right. Yeah. But if it's about doing a thing and it happens to involve bicycles, people are going to be a lot more...
I might go to that.
Yeah, more excited about it. And you have a built-in marketing mechanism. I mean, just simply from a perspective of, if you've got a whole network of people that already are engaged with their community and are already doing work in a culturally competent way, are already reaching their own group of constituents, they are a marketing apparatus for you. They can tell the story of the ride.
When there's 300 rides over 3 weeks, marketing is actually more important than you might think.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I love it this time of year because everybody I see on the street is like promoting and giving a plug for their Pedalpalooza ride.
I've been handed so many flyers and stickers.
But you've got to sort of
Facebook invites.
Get those people, especially on the big days when there might be three rides at the same time or something.
The great thing is, if you're starting something like Pedalpalooza in your town, there isn't going to be 300 rides at first, you know? So you can just focus on making those 12 rides really awesome.
Yeah, and that's the way this started with Bike Summer. The calendar was tiny, but some of the really key things just kept happening, like breakfast on the bridges, still there.
Yeah. So I wanted to just note, like, a technical detail is that the code that's been worked on and tweaked and amplified to be the best possible back-end code for a Bike Fun calendar is available for any city or group that wants to use it. The volunteers that run it for Shift are happy to lend it out, and it's been used in Minneapolis, Vancouver, BC, Cincinnati, Ohio. There's a bunch of places that now do Bike Fun festivals that use the same calendar. Pedalpalooza, which is Minneapolis, St. Paul's Pedalpalooza, starts next month. It's the first time it's ever happened.
Wow. I was just hearing that Eugene wants to have their own Pedalpalooza, but they want to have it after ours. So they can come on, up and then go down.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because Vancouver does Velopalooza, and they make sure that it doesn't line up entirely.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. With ours, so that you can come down a little bit for.
So there's always got to be that first step on making one of these rides happen. I mean, Carl, what would be your advice to somebody that just wants to do it, but they're not kind of sure what that first step
is? Yeah, people get really intimidated. They're like, oh, I need to plan the whole thing. I got to plan out all the routes and figure out who picks up the juicy juice and everything. But really, all you need is the name of the ride, where it starts, and when. And you can just post a really rough description. Don't nail down the details. And as long as you work it out before the ride, you're good. But the best thing you can do is just get it up there on the calendar. I should add, it's not just during Pedalpalooza. You could do it any time of year.
Exactly. I was going to say the same thing. This podcast will be heard after Pedalpalooza, but the Shift calendar is available year-round, and there's a need for Bike Fun all the time.
Absolutely.
Now Lily's got her best TriMet tweets of the month.
All right. So Dan Christensen says, overheard on my TriMet bus. Check it out, candy. That's right, candy from the floor of the bus. I dare ya. Lane Jensen, PDX. Yes, mister, I smell like piss and alcohol. Sit right next to me and let it ferment on my new jacket. TriMet. WNBR, PDX. WNBR is coming up this weekend. TriMet is offering free seat sanitizer to all naked bus riders. Oh yeah, World Naked Bus Ride.
Okay.
At Gates_John, riding into the belly of the beast, TriMet Max during the Starlight Parade, FML.
Nice. And that's our show. Thanks for coming in, Carl.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, you can subscribe to the show at bikeportland.org/podcast and send us any comments you have at podcast@bikeportland.org.
You can spread the word about the show by searching for Bike Portland on iTunes and leaving a review.
And you can read about Pedalpalooza at pedalpalooza.org.
You can follow me at Anomaly on Twitter.
And you can follow at Bike Portland on Twitter and Facebook, too. I'm Jonathan Maas, Bike Portland's publisher.
I'm Lillian Carbake, your podcast producer. Thanks for listening, and remember to exit through the back.
Pass on the left.
And don't forget to thank your bus driver.
When you're biking out with your bike and friends, just ship the bike, that's shipthebike.org. You're trying to get away from the teeming hole.
Teeming hole.
All the steel boxes remind you of the board.
You will be assimilated.
That cloud that's following you will soon be gone, it's true. When you ship the bike, ship-to-bike.org. When you ship to bike, it's grand. You see things that you never planned.
Never planned.
Looking out on the sea and sky and land.
Sky and land.
Be you straight all you can. All you buy. Cycle all the way. Just ship to bike.
Ship-to-bike.org.
We're gonna ship to bike. Ship to bike.
Michael Anderson and I realized that next month is our 3-year anniversary of doing the podcast together.
Woo!
All right. We're a very different podcast than we were 3 years ago, but we also realized that neither of us have sat down and listened to the pilot episode since it came out 3 years ago. So we want your suggestions on how we should re-listen to this and entertain you all and what we should do for our third birthday. So if you have any suggestions, put them in the comments on Bike Portland or send them into podcast@bikeportland.org. Thanks.